or do you think it's going to be more like everyone completely disowning Donald and embracing their own Donald Trump-ish behaviors? Because that's what I'm seeing it going towards. And like, even I am shying away from Donald a little bit recently. And just
okay,
thinking
hey, Brent, here's my response. You don't need to go on. You've got to do all of them at the same time. Both things are going to happen.
Yeah,
they're
going to
impeach Trump. They're going to kick him out, and he'll still be president. You know, it's going to be that crazy. Nobody will be able to make a conclusion of what time it is and what happened. That's what you got to understand. That's why you don't need to watch the media, because it's always going to be too slow and too limited. You just practice thinking the craziest things you can think of to stay up with them.
Because he's really just like causing such bad issues that people are so mad at him that they're empowering themselves just because they're so pissed. Because they're like, Donald's
they
a
are going to empower themselves, Brent. They're going to empower themselves, but they're going to find out their images of what power is ain't fucking powerful. See, we've got cliche images of what a god is. What?
Are you talking about the citizens or?
Yeah, the citizens. The citizens have so many obsolete images that, okay, so they're going to say, okay, fuck Trump, I'll do this. And they'll start taking, they might even say, I'm taking my own power. And they'll find out that's not how you take your power. So he's running a very modern, postmodern, paramodern fucking classroom. That's what I wrote. I don't know if you saw that, Clinton. I wrote something a year ago, but he is taking the shamanic tradition and putting it right in everybody's face, right in the White House. And then I found out that he is kind of an interesting, unique person. Ion was on to him 10 years ago. It's amazing how far ahead Ion is. So I take what Ion says is Trump never loses. He doesn't know how to lose. He's never lost anything. I mean, maybe he interprets a loss into something that's not really practically a loss, a win, but he'll say it's a win. So taking that point that he's going to win everything on a level that we can't even establish what he won or how did he get there and what game was he playing. See, we got to realize this is we can't know anything. We can't know what's happening about anything right now.
No, you can't unless you have already picked a side and are merely counting your wins and losses in the now insofar as how many people come and go to your side. But transcending it's very hard.
Right.
Trying to get some sort of...
Do you know that TV show American Horror Story? Lady Gaga did a role in it last year. Anyways, it's the present American Horror Story, which I just... It's like, I don't know, five episodes, unless they were all posted at the same time. I don't know. But the like Netflix, it's about this leftist lesbian couple freaking out that Trump is president. So nobody – they made a show about the president to be outrageous, and they're talking about the president. It's like something it illustrates the lack of imagination or the uselessness of imagination. They are just showing the present. That's all I had to do to make a horror story. I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Well, it's the present most of the audience probably hasn't even approached yet in their own cognition. It's still the future to them.
It's still what? What'd you say?
It's still fantastical, or it's still the future to them. They don't know it's the present, most of the audience.
Right. Is this Clinton talking?
Sorry. That's me talking, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, for a second, I thought it was Brent. So the... So I guess I would ask, Brent is in school. He's in touch with his peer groups. Clint's not in school. I'm going to call you Clint. It's Clinton is too takes too long. So Clint.
All right, no problem.
Yeah, I don't know who Clint's in touch with, but he's not in touch with he's not in school. So you have, I would say Clint's more isolated and Brent's involved. So Brent, you're involved. Is everybody in your world, the peer group, ignoring Trump or are they always talking about him? Or neither, or both.
I haven't heard him mentioned once in the past 3 or 4 months, unless it's like, you know, a straight up joke.
Right. So
people
what
have
is
withdrawn
it?
Completely.
Yeah, the younger mind has withdrawn.
It's too much.
Sure,
just,
it's
fuck it, I'm not even going to try and put any type of label on it.
Okay, well, that's good. So in your isolated position, Clint, relatively isolated, what do you see? I don't know what you judge. What are you going to – do you talk to anybody about it? What are people in your world saying in Canada?
Well, I've been telling people since a year before the election that he was going to win and that all the polls were wrong and that all the news was fake. And, you know, I accepted the polite, you know, nods until I was proven right. And then generally I get concerned adults asking me when with complete utter they're lost and they're just trying to ask me what's really going on, and I'm trying my best to put it into words, but well, sorry, all of your news is fake and everything you believe in is a lie is not something you tell someone, you know, 30 years of your age.
Okay, now put it, how did you know Trump was going to win? What were you basing that on?
I've been so heavily involved in the internet for so long that I had felt the trends moving, and I understood that the left and the social justice movement within political activism on campuses was losing a lot of ground, and that nobody was going to believe Hillary Clinton should win the presidency merely because she would be, you know, a woman breaking the glass ceiling. I knew that everything Hillary Clinton had going for her was old and stale and would not resonate. And furthermore, I saw that Trump was leaping on the cutting edge of wit insofar as, again, internet trolls have defined how to be audacious and impactful and a culture jammer.
Right.
As the saying goes, lately I've heard more and more people try to claim that the right is the new counterculture, and I at this point I can't deny it. I wouldn't call it the right in the traditional Christian conservative sense. I would call it more like the counter-left return to personal agency or desire for personal autonomy and personal freedoms and risks.
The God, the God direction.
The God, sure, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There is a Facebook page called God Trump Emperor or something. And you guys seen that? Yeah, God Trump Emperor.
Yep, God. Yep, God Emperor Trump.
Yeah, that's it.
He's playing eight-dimensional chess while everyone else is playing checkers.
But it's a good example. You being a younger person had time. You know, McLuhan said tribes look at the young people to find out what's going on in the tribe. They know the young people are picking up the present. So you being a younger person and in the right media, the present media, you could see what was happening.
I felt Trump coming like Obi-Wan Kenobi feels a disturbance in the Force, you know? I just closed my eyes and I...
That's pretty good. The let's see. So we all understand Trump then. We got two guys here. They explained it. Now, wait a minute. Brent made the mistake and started to try to look for something. He looked at the media to see what was going on. You don't do that, Brent.
Brent.
Yeah, no, straight Brent, up. It was kind of fucking with me for the past few days. I couldn't make – and nobody can make something of it, but I couldn't at all.
Yeah, no, it's a – it's a Rorschach painting. Brent, earlier on you were about to ask about whether people would slowly become like Trump while disowning him or hating him. They tend to become more, I guess, of a strongman character in themselves while hating and ragging on him for being a strongman. How did you come to that? It's like a projection, like a self-denial sort of thing?
No, he's two things going on. See, we don't like his TV iconography. He's not fitting into the proper present of the TV traditional iconography. But our chip bodies are autonomous and don't even need the TV body. So you got two bodies talking. So when you say Brent, how do you put those two together? You have to talk to four Brents.
Yeah.
You know, chip body, astral body, chemical body, and TV body is Brent. And mystery body.
I hope you see
here.
Yeah. Interpretive dance, does that do it for you?
So on the chemical body platform, it's very easy not to like him because if you talk to him face to face, you might not know what he's about and just fucking hate him because he comes across like a complete fucking idiot douchebag. But
not to the average American. His popularity is huge because in person, face to face, he's the nicest guy anyone's ever met, and he thanks the waiters and he's – Yeah, like he's a glad handing. He's an authentic glad hander. I mean, he shakes people's hands and they believe he likes them, unlike most politicians who are faking it. He's got a very excellent chemical body relationship with people on one-on-one.
Yeah,
I
you
mean,
see that. When he went to the Hurricanes, he had people worshiping him and crying and so happy to be near him. And his wife is beautiful and she's smiling. They look very good in the interpersonal.
Yeah, he's got an animal magnetism.
Yeah.
See, I look
but,
at it.
But then, if you're on his wrong side, if you're on his wrong side, if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to make him lose face, then oh yeah, he's gonna go on the attack. He's gonna explode on you.
Yeah.
See, I appreciate his douchebaggery over the chip body more because people in my generation or my peer group, my culture. Whatever is funny on the TV or on the on the phone screen, that's what's cool. So I get a kick out of watching videos of him speaking online. Now I'm sure I have heard he's a very nice in person, but that's why I'm interpreting it backwards because when I see him talk online, it's meme worthy. It's comedy.
Yes, that you are seeing his screen persona. I guess his screen body. When you're seeing it, right? And that's because he's been on TV for decades. He knows how to be Donald Trump, the celebrity, who's merely an exaggeration of his real self. It's sort of an act, but it's still him, right? He's got this earnest television persona, which is merely a cartoon version of regular everyday him.
Now, I read his tweets regularly. Say 70%, 80% is mindless. I met the Boy Scouts today. Wonderful people. I went to Alabama today. Wonderful people. That's all he says. Like it is totally in traditional George Orwell Marxist critique or some detached perspective. He's fucking propaganda, bland, nothing. He's not telling anybody anything. He just said everything is great. But every now and then he goes, fuck you, to somebody. In the middle of being nice.
His propaganda is purposely obvious and easy to see through, and that's his being honest. He trusts everyone can see through this slim, slow level of obvious fakeness.
Right.
Which is strange.
And he makes basic points in terms of the media. He says, look, you guys are going on about my Russian hoax and all this stuff. What about Hillary's emails? What about the fucking corruption she did? Why aren't they going after the crooked Hillary? And then he goes, sad. He just says sad.
Sad. Yeah. Well, he'll say that something horrible will happen too, and he'll say sad. Are you joking? No, it's sad.
Yeah. So, Brent, I wanted to tell you, I love so far watching two episodes. I love American Vandal.
Yeah, isn't it hilarious? It's awesome.
Yeah. I turned on the show, and Carol, I said, look, I'm going to watch this. Brent recommended. And I go, like, 5 seconds into it, I start laughing. Carol looks at me, what? It's already funny? I said, yeah, the first fucking instance was funny. And I was laughing through most of it, the first show. What I didn't like about the second show is they kind of kept going over stuff. They kept repeating things. You know, it was weird, the second episode. They didn't move forward that much. You know, they repeated a lot of the content of the first episode. I assume they're not going to keep doing that.
They do. They do a little bit. Do you know the backstory on the main character that's playing the Vandal?
Peter Maldonado?
No. The guy who's playing.
The fucking jerk.
Right. Do you know his backstory though, Jimmy Tatro?
No.
He became an actor through YouTube. He made YouTube videos, comedy videos. And through his own YouTube channel, he emerged into the acting world.
Wow.
Which is pretty
incredible. He got attention? He got followers?
He had so many followers.
Oh, like Justin Bieber.
Putting him in movies.
Beg your pardon, do it again. What'd you just say?
He had so many
followers. I said like Justin Bieber started on YouTube.
Yeah, like Justin Bieber. But what are you saying, Brent? What did he do or what did you just
say? So it's the same phenomenon as all these music stars using the internet or YouTube. But he's probably one of the first actors to do that.
Wow. And what was his comedy, stupid comedy, like his present character, or
It pretty much matched up with the character he's playing right now. He did a really funny one that was making fun of like fraternity brothers. That was what got him pretty famous.
So he had a lot of clicks, you know, a million. So Hollywood noticed that and gave him the gig.
Yeah, I'm going to see what he has.
That's the fastest way.
Yeah, pretty neat. And so how long ago did he do that? Like 5 years ago? 2 years ago?
It's got to be around 5 years, maybe even more.
Has he been in other TV series before this one?
I think he was in a movie recently, like a small part. Let's see what he has for subscribers. So he has close to 3 million subscribers on one of his YouTube channels.
Right. Is he still making them now that he's got this show? Does he have time?
Yeah, he is. He put up a new video a week ago, actually.
Wow. So which is what was incredible. Funny in the first episode, he's going on agreeing that it was a tragedy, but the biggest tragedy was that he because that Alex Stromboli guy, you know, made up the story, it seems, that he did it. He says, the big tragedy is now I'm kicked out of school. Like he's Trumpian. He goes back to himself. I am the biggest tragedy here. You guys have fucked up my life direction, you know? That was his interpretation of what was going on. So what you got there, you got a dumb guy, apparent dumb guy, thinking he's a god, acting like God, kind of reflecting Trump or some people's interpretation of Trump.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
He's a dumb guy who thinks he's the center of the universe.
Right, and you'll keep on watching and you'll realize that the documentary becomes a very popular media source to the whole entire high school, and it just fucks shit up.
Right. Who's that? Somebody gets the stuff in the background. Okay, well, that's a very good discussion you guys presented. I hit the jackpot there by asking you two to share perspective on the only topic around, which is Trump. He's the only topic.
Yeah.
And is anybody else, Ben or Greg or Trabuco? Is there some 949 person? You want to say something? Or about anything else? We're opening the mic here.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Greg.
We watched the show documentary on Bring Me Roger Stone.
Did you see my email? Did Ginny show you? He's the headlines today.
Okay. No, I did not see. I did not see that.
Yes,
email.
He had. He was being investigated today. He had to come and speak before some Senate committee, and he was outrageous as usual. And everybody's all fucked up about it. So he is the news today.
Excellent. He deserves to be the news every day. That guy's been listening to Ion since 1978. He absolutely doesn't give a rat's ass what anybody thinks about him. If these are the rules and I'm allowed to do it, I'm going to do it. And I just was gaga listening to his documentary. He had
also,
so much bravado.
Yeah, I don't know if he's with her anymore. What happened to his wife or whatever it was? They were an open wife swapper.
Oh. Yeah, that was his in the documentary they said that kind of messed up his public image a little bit, but you know, him and his wife were into going to sex clubs and that, and they kind of made a big deal about it, but he's been happily married for years to the same woman who brought kids into the relationship, and he digged it. He said, no, I never had any of this until I met her, and I'm he seems to be a happy family man to some extent.
Yeah, and I didn't notice, it seems in my mind that he was living alone at the end of the movie with his Nixon collection. I don't know. I don't know if he's still with her or she died or something. Maybe she died. I'm not sure. But you can check that out. I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah, anyway. But what fascinated us watching this guy was his ability to sense how the political systems worked, how to manipulate it to the absolute nth degree and wiggle through all the little regulations and find the sweet spot and do whatever the fuck he thought was needed to win. It was the guy's a rock star in my world. And he's got Richard Nixon face tattooed on his back.
Talk about attracting negative energy. The guy seems to survive negative energy.
Totally, yeah. Totally. He absolutely loved the fact that he loathed him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he was almost poisoned a short while ago, wasn't he?
I'm not sure. I'm not up in that.
Roger Stone? Yeah, I know. I think he was on Alex Jones or something saying, oh, they tried to poison me, blah, 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 blah.
So you know who he is?
Yeah, I got to keep an eye everywhere. I see him on the conspiracy theory circuit, you know, the alt media for the people who still haven't fallen off all the way trusting anybody. They still trust Alex Jones, right?
And he's on Alex Jones.
Oh, him and Alex Jones.
Infrequently, yeah.
Buddies,
he's a guest on
sure.
there every. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
What'd you say, Greg, that he's saying for sure, too?
He and Alex Jones are bum buddies.
Oh, okay.
Best of friends. Best of
right.
friends.
You,
they were appeared
now,
together
does Brent
beside
know,
each other.
You know who we're talking about, Brent?
Who?
Roger Stone. You know who that is?
Yeah, yeah. The guy with the really white hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Odd-shaped head.
And,
yes. Toupee.
Yeah, the picture of him coming out of the committee, he has like an evil smile. Maybe they picked that picture because it looked like they wanted to create that effect. But, yeah, he looks like a demonic face.
Yeah, a little demonic, but definitely Teflon. I don't think anybody can touch him. He's probably got more dirt on. He's probably like J. Edgar Hoover's protege, or J. Edgar Hoover left him his files.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of guy. He would get those files.
Because he started in, like, when he was in college, he was pretty brash in how he leaped into, I don't know, Roy Cohn or one of those guys. He got into the bad part of the Republican world really young and then did well in their terms. He successful.
Yeah, he was the youngest person to be questioned on the Watergate investigation.
Right.
He claims that his mother gave him a book on politics when he was young. And he wanted Nixon to win so bad, he told all the kids in his school that whoever was running against Nixon would put the kids in school on Saturdays.
Right,
and that
right.
was the moment he said disinformation was so powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Great. Oh,
wow. What a mother.
Yeah.
Did a book on politics.
I remember he was a very bad guy in Mae Brussels' world. She talked occasionally about him. Didn't like him, and the left doesn't like him. They think he's
well. He didn't
scum.
Have any morals. He didn't. He did
right.
what within the bounds of legality did what it took.
Yeah,
it didn't matter. He was out to win, and that's it. Period. I don't care.
And so his home, one of his homes, anyways, has a huge Nixon. Imagine having Nixon memorabilia. I mean, that's. Pretty
that's pretty
vulgar.
Sick.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine having Nixon stuff all around your home, Greg? You would never do that.
No, absolutely.
Even
no,
if you claimed you weren't superstitious, you wouldn't do that.
No, absolutely not. No.
And then tattoo his face on you. Jeez. So, anybody else?
Well,
what?
I was just going to say, apparently, you know, Trump's got that letter from Mrs. Nixon saying how if you ever run to be president, I'm sure that you'll win. And he got that in the 80s.
Wow.
So the Nixons have been rooting for Trump to be president for a long time now.
Yes. What was Ginny? Ginny was surprised that some big promoter was trying to get Trump to run back in the, 30 years ago. Who was that, Greg? Do you remember in the documentary?
Well, Stone said 20 years ago that he did approach Trump, wanted him to run for president, and his phrase was, I saw a political horse here that I would ride to the very end and he'd win. But when Stone first approached Trump, he was into his real estate and really wasn't into it. So they had a long-standing relationship, and he just waited for Trump to come on board. And as soon as Trump decided he was running, Stone was all about it, all about it. And every time Trump got some bad PR, Stone would just tell him, you just double down and don't worry about it. People don't care when they're hungry or they're starving that you talked about grabbing somebody's pussy in a locker room chat. They don't care about it. And he was right. Yeah. He seemed to be able to predict that kind of outcome.
Response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, don't worry about it. So.
Anybody else want to say something who hasn't spoken? Come on. What are you here for?
Bob, do you read the comments on Facebook, like news feed, like how people are trolling very hard?
Well, I know they're doing it. I occasionally have looked at it, but I don't think I don't make an effort to do it. I forget to look at the comments. That's actually the best part, probably.
Let me read a string of comments here.
Yeah.
Because they're just,
okay. What's the topic?
So this is a New York Post article about how Anthony Scaramucci is dropping his paternity test, and he admitted that some kid is his. Now, this girl comments, he was under the devil's power, and now he is under his own. The person underneath her comments, you need to go to the nearest mental hospital and check yourself in. There is no such thing as the devil. You are completely unhinged. And then she says, drink a chamomile tea. You need to relax. Then accuses him of being a very ignorant old Trump supporter and that fat pig needs to be put in a home. Now, he goes on to tell her, if I was a Trump supporter, I would believe in God, the devil, and the invisible man, wouldn't I? Also, little girl, throw away that tea. Get yourself a stiff drink. And it is you who needs to relax. Trump won over 10 months ago. Time to move on. Great entertainment.
Yeah. Yes, if you have the time, and sometimes I do have the time, but somehow it doesn't interest me, the endless hallucinating on each other that these people are doing.
Yeah, hallucinating. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, they are. There's no –
well, that's
– nothing. They all come from a very strong position, and they don't recognize how nutty their position is, and they just shoot at other positions. And then maybe some of it are bots, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It all depends on how these people come together. I mean, you have internet communities where everyone knows each other and everyone talks in long paragraphs and the conversation goes on for days. And then you have these short-lived, you know, encounters in the night, blow by blow, nobody's talking to nobody.
Right.
And so it depends on where you go to get your fix of internet dialogue. Varies greatly.
Yeah, the chip body community. Yeah, you go. Where do you go to get your sense of a chip body community? Yeah, depends. A sense of, there's other people. Look what they're doing. Oh, they're all pretty fucked up. Then you go back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you're in school right now, eh?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, I was at college last year, and I remember sitting around watching people with their laptops and with their phones flipping through memes for an hour, just sitting there, click, 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 or scrolling endlessly looking at JPEGs with, you know, a cat with a funny caption or something. One after another, after another, after another. It's like a blank look on their face, and they're just jonesing. It's like chain smoking, only on, you know, the order of second after second after second. Is there, like, an attention span gap between people who can stay focused on one thing versus people who need a new novel thing every couple seconds? Do you notice that among your peer group?
Yeah, absolutely. Memes are fucking huge, and they totally, you know, they make you stoned. It's like an ADHD type of influenced situation. And that shit, like, people, you know, procrastinating, that's always been the joke of a student. You know, they procrastinate so much, but holy shit, people just sit on their phones and look at memes and do work for 5 minutes and then look at memes again. I mean, I do that shit too. I mean, I'm no better. But yeah, it's just like, it's never ending content. That's, actually really entertaining.
Yeah. Listen,
sure.
Guys,
and it's,
hey, wait just a minute. I didn't know memes had become this term. I mean, I came up with Android meme 20 years ago or more. This is prophecy. I fucking predict this word. What do you guys mean by memes, and why is it called that?
It's come a long way since Dawkins. The Dawkins formal meme theory, I mean, now what the word meme means in social media is any unit of information that goes viral.
Okay.
So it could just be a funny cat picture. It could be a short YouTube video. It could be a phrase. But anything that spreads and can be consumed in a second glance is a meme, according to marketing experts who look at Twitter as the be-all, end-all of
of present communication.
Information transfer.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's got nothing to do with the genetic theory that Dawkins and whatever came up with 30, 40 years ago. Right?
1976. Just, the book is called The Selfish Gene, 1976.
Yes.
And he became a famous, for the younger kids, atheist. An atheist art debater. Did you know that? That, you know, over the last 7 years, atheists
sure,
were...
Sure, so, yeah. Yeah, that would be Dawkins and Sam Harris.
Yes.
And Christopher Hitchens, especially.
Right. Yeah.
They were kind of like the high priests of rational skeptical atheism for basically most of my growing up, you know, yeah.
That's
and,
right.
And they really peaked about 5 or 6 years ago until they started to get, until YouTube kind of brought everything together, and they started getting in massive fights with feminists, and it was a big kerfuffle anyway. But
Hitchens,
sure, I saw all that stuff unfold.
I interacted a lot with Hitchens when I lived in New York City. I used to go to panels.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to go to panels, and he was sort of a, well, what was interesting, the first time I showed up and he was on a panel, he came up to me at the intermission pretty quickly, and he says, I see you understand or know a lot about McLuhan. What can you tell me about Harold Innes? So I said, oh, yeah, I can tell you a lot. So he said, here's my number, and I gave him my number. And he says, I need to talk to you about it. He was looking at the McLuhan revival. He wanted to be contrarian, so he was going to take the Innes route on the McLuhan revival. Innes is the other competitor with McLuhan for the creation of media ecology. So 2 weeks later, he left a message. You know, I wasn't there, and then I called back, and he sort of wasn't there. He didn't. He never answered. When I called back, he didn't answer and follow up. And then I kept bumping into him at different scenes, and he always was available after the panel to talk to anybody. So I found it interesting to go where he was, and then this crowd of people would be around him asking about all kinds of things, and he'd be really into it. So he had that kind of street energy. He was ready. He didn't get tired. He was always available to talk to people, you know, after. Whereas other celebrities would disappear, wouldn't talk to anybody. He did. And he'd be talking to, you know, homeless people, anybody who showed up. So he was pretty nice that way. And that's the kind of crowd I like. I like just going to see what these anonymous people have to say with someone like him. So, but he never, he lost his interest in the McLuhan-Innes thing pretty quickly, it seemed. I mean, he would talk and he would never bring it up again.
Right.
But I thought it was pretty perceptive. I hadn't said much, but he knew. He says, oh, you know something about McLuhan, so you probably know something about Innes. And I did. But we never had the discussion. Anyways, back to you were saying, okay, so Dawkins is a sir. You know, it's Sir Richard Dawkins over there in London. So a meme, it sounds like me, it is, I consider the TV body as a passive thing. You're active on the chip body. You got to create your own spaces. You got to find your own patterns. But they sit back and watch a TV show just to veg out or be relaxed and be passive. It sounds like memes are the modern role of TV. They're studying, being active, and then they take a break and go passive and look at what society says is a big deal for 10 seconds, you know, a meme with a big thing. So it's the new TV passive role there. And look how they work, and then, right, 50 minutes later, they got to go passive again because they're just keeping up. And McLuhan said way back there, the only job in the future will be knowing. And that's what's going on. Everybody has to know some aspect of what's going on in this sort of fake outer kingdom. So that's what the meme means. My new theory. And, you know, I coined it. It's artificial intelligence. It's not human. It's the android meme.
It's also, 90% of the time, it's satire. That's the big thing
about
the meme. So you don't have to put any moral judgment on it and try and map anything or even have a judgment because it's satire. It's pure enjoyment or fun.
It's pure titillation. So right. This is where McLuhan says, you know, way back with TV, that it was the highest decibels of consciousness. We got a super, McLuhan called it super civilized and subatomic. That's what he called people in the 50s. Now, we're that squared, tripled, quadrupled, whatever. We are so advanced in our perceptions of stuff. You can't even define it in any old cultural terms. We are mutants, exploring our dangling ganglia and stimulating it. And super meta, though we can't articulate it verbally. But we live on a level of hyper ESP. Nobody had that much experience coming into their senses, you know, every hour. People lived in a place and they looked at the same scenery every day. You're looking at new scenes every 5 seconds. Think of that. No wonder parallel worlding is going to become a norm. That's like slow travel compared to a digital travel. Are you with me, people?
I'm listening.
You're listening.
I'm kind of at that point where I'm just don't have anything else to say. You know, I'm information.
That's Clifton?
Overloaded.
Is that Clinton talking?
No, this is Brent.
Yeah, I can't. You guys have blurred here. So Brent's gone passive. He's just going to look at some beads for a few minutes.
Yeah, I need to veg out. You know?
Okay, come on, someone else. Let me see who else is here. A couple of new people. Why don't you say something? Other than be afraid of, nobody knows who you are. We ain't going to find out who you are.
Hey, Bob, I have a good concept we can briefly talk about.
Look, they hung up. Trabuco hung up. Definitely hostile espionage going on there.
Who's Trabuco?
Trabuco, California or something.
Oh.
Was his address. So what were you going to say?
Well, something I realized the other day is that for my classes, my assignments they have different bodies. So I have assignments online, and then I also have a textbook, and then I also have a lecture in person.
Right.
So, you know, I have, you know, the chemical body lecture. There's, you know, the written book, and then there's the chip body online. And it makes things really difficult because the information doesn't line up. Which is, you know.
Okay.
They say that students nowadays aren't as educated as, you know, 50 years ago where they use primarily books. But the thing is, we're doing, you know, take my biochemistry class, for example, the online homework that we do every week. The questions are a lot different than the questions that will be on the exam. And the lecture material is a lot more watered down than what's in the textbook. So you have to balance looking at the textbook, looking at your in-person lecture notes, and looking at your online assignment, and you have to kind of pick and choose and guess what's going to be on the exam because that's, you know, what people see as important.
Right. No, the your generation is you know, more intelligent, more adapt to all the different media. Well, I don't know if we call it intelligent. But you guys are not, and even Einstein said this, you cannot relate any of past culture to the present generation. They're in a wholly new situation, and there's never been any rules about it, and you guys are making all this multi-phased spatial stuff going on. So the criticism of you people is very inadequate, you know, the traditional one. They can't talk, they have no social skills, blah, blah, blah. Now, you thought you had that problem, but you overcome that. Now you can learn more things, and you have other problems. You can say that humans
are
still
–
right. So McLuhan says the media is the only thing that changes, that humans never change, and they're the content. Mm-hmm. So what that would be, what never changes? The interaction between people juggling for emotional superiority in the moment, whatever it is. What?
Human nature.
Yeah, the human nature, greed, assholeness, egos and preferences continues. But the – and that's like a spiritual problem. But media and language runs this world, and it dominates, and that's what Ian calls mortar, social mortar. And that is what we're watching the changes in, and that's what people – engage in seriously to avoid the spiritual problems of their ego versus someone else's ego, you know, determining whatever that is about. In social media, what you guys have to deal with in public languages, public media, is so way beyond anything anybody ever did before. So anybody who starts fucking, you know, complaining about you guys, you tell them to go fuck yourself. And you say, you fucker, you adult, you don't know how to properly critique us. Everything you come up with is fucking stupid and limited. You don't even know what the issues are. And you have a right to tell adults that. I think more, that's part of what this What Youth Revolution is. Gather an army of voices to really criticize the superior people who are making more money than you and supposedly got status and elder status and nice houses and all that bullshit. That's what Trump's fucking violating. Trump's acting like the guy in American Vandal. You know, he's got kid charisma. He's not acting like an adult, the stupid adult, which is every adult around.
I look at characters like Tom Green.
Yes, I know.
Or Nathan Fielder and Nathan For You as the kind of forerunners of being a goofball or having this role of court jester on behalf of, you know, the youth sort of
right.
Sort
Are you
deal.
Still there, Clinton?
Yep, that's okay. Me talking.
Oh, that was you? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, Brent, didn't you say something within the last minute?
I don't remember.
Wow.
Bob. I don't even know.
So that was all Clint. I can't keep you guys. You're all the same. You fucking young people, you're all the same.
Well, that's it. The machines have got us all cloned now. We're all disconnected. We're one.
No, you don't. You're actually, you sound different a little bit. But anyway, so what I attach it. So what did you just say, Clinton? Because I put the wrong personality on it. You were just saying.
I said, you were talking about what the youth standing up to adults.
Oh, you mentioned Tom Green. He's Canadian. Did
Tom Green,
know
yeah.
about that. That's why, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know all about Tom Green. Absolutely.
So what their comedy was is they're goofs because the adults, the grievance is, you fucking adults can't give me any goddamn standards. And so I'm swimming alone, and I have no guidelines. That's maybe what's going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, just being fed up with all the advice not working anymore.
Yeah.
And that's all the advice there is.
Yeah, and so he stumbles around trying to find a pattern of order for his own issues. And that's what we got two of you guys right here who live that, who have to deal with it.
When I come out of my bubble, I'm a real big goof and everyone laughs. It's pretty hard to balance.
Well, you're saying that you look like a goof when you come out of your bubble?
Oh, sure. I use weird big words, and my culture's all right. See, you can cherry pick. If you're on the internet all day, you cherry pick the culture you consume. I watch the TV shows I want. I'm out of sync with everyone else. I don't know what's on the radio. I don't know what's on TV.
Yeah, and I don't think there's one kid who could come on like you just did and say, well, that's Hawkins, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Brent doesn't know who Hawkins is. You mean you know stuff.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, that's it. It's the order.
That's a given, Brent. Yeah, let's work towards other categories. You know that we know that everybody's an idiot.
Anyone who's following their own interests is making their own pathway, zigzagging through everything. And whatever you do know, you're unlikely to find anyone else in your real life who knows about it. But on the internet, there's at least 10,000 people scattered across the planet who are into exactly that thing, man.
Right.
Some
now, Clint,
say,
the interesting thing is I say that the maxims, the morals, the aphorisms, the wisdom that Ian puts out is the best source of wisdom because he's describing what people are already doing. Ian says, you know, follow your own bliss. Don't pay any attention to anybody else. That's what people do on the internet with their chip body. He's updating elderly advice to what is actually happening. There's no time. There's no space. So as you hear more Ian, you'll see, look at him describing, or them, it, describing technologically, but in what appears to be a spiritual advice, you know. But no, he's describing the present. So when Brent goes, I'm an idiot. Now, Brent, why would you say that about yourself?
Because I balance too much shit to be, to sound extremely articulate or be completely, to be an expert on anything. I know a lot, but I'm not an expert on one thing because.
You don't have to be. So I'd say that there's a lot of people like you, you know, that's not, to be an idiot is not a disgrace. It's a good functioning citizen today.
And well, also, Brent, I'm you 8 years from now after finally pulling some stuff together. I'm very much a generalist. I don't have any expertise, but I think the biggest thing is I have a whiff of all the things that I don't know and that I'll never be an expert in. But I got a whiff of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that alone, having that big field of seeing all the shit you'll never know laid out in front of you is the end result.
I find it very interesting that I can go people I know, I go to their Facebook page. Every Facebook page is different. Everybody's emphasizing different stuff. If you just watch, say, go through 15 friends or 15 somebodies and look at their Facebook page, every one of them is a whole world that you would have to stick around and explore. And then you go to the next person, they get a whole bunch of other postings, other topics. You ever notice that? Nobody's the same.
No.
And then you find how much is out there just by scanning 10 people's Facebook page. Look at it, just all that each one has, how much difference and data there is. This is what people can't articulate.
Well, there you go. That's right. And, I mean, this is where if you're looking at pattern recognition, the sort of patterns you need to recognize a pattern across such diverse information is going to have to be something spiritual because that's the only commonality across.
Right.
So, like for instance, I've got friends who are into baseball, and they can explain anything in the world within the concept of baseball.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Every discrete topic is itself connected to anything else and can be used as a metaphor to describe the totality of everything else.
Yeah. So and I've encountered people somewheres recently, they said, I don't understand football. You know, like there's that much diversity of understanding because so many cultures are in touch with each other now and they see other cultures all the time that you get seen like, I don't understand football. How could you not understand football? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what they're missing, but they're not putting it down, but it just shows you the hallucination that's going on.
Well, you sent me a quote here earlier tonight, Bob. The more you create village conditions, the more discontinuity and division and diversity. The global village absolutely ensures maximal disagreement on all points.
That's right.
The tribal global village is far more divisive, full of fighting than any nationalism ever was. Village is fission, not fusion, in depth.
Right. Now, that's McLuhan in the mid-60s. And everybody thought when he said it was a global village, they thought of a pastoral, rural, nice, pleasant image. And and they called him a technological optimist. It took the people 30 years to realize that's not what he meant by global village because they hadn't read him and they didn't know that quote. And that's a great McLuhan quote. And he's defining back there what happened. And so he was accurate. He wasn't an optimist nor a pessimist. He said he was apocalyptic. And that is a tremendous prediction. And that would be the fate of the chemical body in the 60s and 70s. Once the Andromine took over, the Andromine mirrored that back to people. The Andromine says, okay, what do these humans do? What do they act like? Well, they act divisive and in a global village. So they played it back to us, starting with, the Reagan era.
Is what Brent was reading to us earlier with the Facebook comments. You have the devil in them, right? Yes. That's what it is, the global village.
Yeah, you have
people calling each other idiots.
Yeah, because they have iconic – you can almost take those people that he read. Okay, that person is an educated person, quote, educated, never took religion seriously. Then there's other people, whatever their path was, they take religion seriously. And they are shocking to each other. You know, they don't realize that, although they can have a different view of it. But so you get, that's where it's slightly boring. It's predictable, the misunderstandings that goes on.
Yes.
It was slightly entertaining what he read, but not something, I've seen that a thousand times, that kind of argument. That kind of disagreement.
Oh, sure. And each of those people can then go back from that encounter to a place online where everyone agrees with them and pat them on the back and show them that, you know, echo chambers, bubble.
Yeah. And so Ian said back in 2009 that the public had got to the point where they were acting out the post-information mood by going, whatever. Like, nobody thought there should be they just basically didn't know in the public world what was going on, and they were learning to live with that, that they weren't going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I claim to figure it out.
Well, I see great opportunities for reduction, simplification, right? Software needlessly fragments everything, but software is very easy to change. Software can change overnight. Everyone leaves one website, uninstalls one app, goes and installs the next one. It's so simple, right? Once you have the hardware, the computer, in your hand, then you can erase it all, obliterate whatever it's working with, switch to something else, right? So the fact that the structures or the infrastructure of what connects us is so volatile or subject to revision or subject to, you know, the demands of the crowd that, I mean, I don't see websites like Twitter or Facebook or YouTube lasting longer than the next few years if they don't listen to what people want and listen and go along with their demands, right?
Well, what would they try to impose? Are you talking about sequential? You go from one thing and group, everybody goes to one place?
Yes. I've been on the internet for 20 years. You're in the hottest thing ever. You're in this site. Everyone uses it, and they make a couple changes, and boom, it's deserted overnight. They all moved on to the next best thing, right?
Right.
You can hop around websites like nothing, and it's like having your eggs in many baskets. I've got accounts on many different sites. If one of them goes down, I'm still around, right? At the end of the day, the internet connects people, and the people are around for a lifetime. Their identities may be fragmented across different avatars across different sites, but as the different platforms come and go and come and go and come and go, the public will learn that what remains behind is the same people with the same ideas gradually, right? The internet is going to reduce to a world of individual human beings left at the end of the day once all the different software mediating forms between us become a blur and stop being important. Right now, people love Twitter, because it's the only thing they've known. They've known it for 10 years. Or they love Pinterest, or they love Instagram, or they love whatever app it is. But when they're like me, and they've been around for so long that they've learned to stop loving the platform and start loving the people on the other side, then that's a whole new mindset. Now you can follow, I can follow you on Facebook. I can follow you, Bob, on this website. I can follow you on the radio. I can send you a letter and drop it in the mailbox if I wanted to. It's the people who stick around while the forums come and go.
Right. So that's what's happening. That's a natural ecology. So is there something you would change about that?
Well, yes. I would cut out the middlemen. I would connect my computer to your computer, and there wouldn't be a corporation in the middle listening to what we say. And that's entirely possible. The change there necessary is psychological and marketing. I mean, the software is there already. I can have an encrypted connection to your PC right tonight if we wanted to.
Right.
Never one in the world could choose to do this if the idea got out there. But the idea will never get out there because the interests against such a thing are, I mean, if Twitter was gone.
It's going that way, though.
Inevitably, it's all of the current infrastructure, like Google, all of Silicon Valley, is trying as hard as they can to put the brakes on it. And they will succeed in putting the brakes on it, but they can't. Eventually, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, it's the only thing possible. It's just how long will it take to slowly erode the old monolithic centralizing social media companies.
Right. So you see us you hook up with, you then have your own interactions. I don't know. You somehow hook up to each other's computer, and that's better?
Yeah, it's like if your address book connected you to the other person's phone. Like it used to be, you know, I call your phone, you talk.
You create your own Facebook network.
Yes, yes, something that's like a good way of looking at it. Yeah,
yeah, you become
and it's
Mark
your computer
Zuckerberg.
Connecting to his computer, yeah.
Okay, so we are – usually we have to go to a group page to interact. Then you're
some, yeah, some yeah. centralizing directory, yeah, yeah. yeah.
You got to get in your car and go to that place. And there's millions of things there. But now the next thing would be you can meet other people. But
yeah,
we're
yeah.
already kind of doing that. People can, you know, email, text each other. But
yeah, they do.
Well, okay, look at this. Since people need a sense of the outer world, there's an outer world that you're not responsible for, but it's there. That might keep the centralized thing going. This is what McLuhan said. We will continue decentralizing and centralizing. Those two mm-hmm. actions won't stop. So right now you've got, you know, what Snowden revealed. Everything is known about you from at central headquarters, but it doesn't mm-hmm. matter because you're all over the place anyways doing all these different things that the government doesn't know whether it's wrong or not. So mm-hmm. massive decentralization, a massive integration. And the government doesn't – what are they can't determine what are we defending. You know, what? How much terrorism should we block? How many walls should we build? And I guess Trump is in the middle of that, confusing it even more.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, which is good. It's probably good that he's making it so people can't decide what's the purpose of their particular job. Like there's a lot of people in the government now just sitting there, and the boss ain't coming in. He's not sending a boss in. They're just sitting there doing nothing, and he's eroding the federal bureaucracy.
Right. If you want stability and long-term predictability, then Trump is awful.
Yeah.
But if you want the freedom of anarchy that we all enjoy to live, you know, our private lives, then, yeah, mixing up the system, keeping the system on its edge is
the
freedom alive, you know?
He's shamanic that way. Now, who's mm-hmm. – Trabuco's back. You want to say something, Trabuco? Why are you here? Yeah, I keep clicking and it comes back. Okay, there it is. What would you like to say, Trabuco? That's what your phone says. I don't know if that's – you know that you're Trabuco. You're 949. Jazz up to 22. 94 is 13, 9 is 22. Okay, so Anonymous, you're a new person. You want to say something? Well, I'm glad you guys are here, Brent and and Clint, because it wouldn't be anybody, nothing going on. Oh, let me just check the chat line. I keep forgetting to check chat line. What are people saying there? Mateo, one iteration of the peer-to-peer model would be the blockchain. Okay. You can probably
yes.
talk about that. Explain. Are you talking a peer-to-peer model?
Yes, I'm describing peer-to-peer.
That's crypto.
What the blockchain is, yes, yes. It's everyone's computer is working together to hammer out the one true record or account of what's going on. So the blockchain is how Bitcoin works, for instance. It's one ledger that everyone's computer agrees, okay, this person, you know, Alice gave money to Bob and Bob gave money to Charlie and this is how much it is. And as long as all the computers who are all connected peer-to-peer agree that's what happened, then that's what happened. And it's unhackable because you'd have to hack everyone's computer or, you know, 51% of the computers in the world would need to be hacked to mess with the blockchain. So the blockchain is a perfect example of peer-to-peer technology which creates a secure internet for people to do their dealings on. You could actually replace lawyers. If you wrote law in software, you could replace lawyers, you could replace accountants with computations which are being done by everyone's computer simultaneously, and everyone's computer simultaneously agrees that the answer is correct, and thus it goes down in the record for here and forever after, amen, done. All the computers in the world agree on this course of action. That's what blockchain technology is.
Okay, so it's a technology blockchain.
Yes.
So
which
what is it?
It's It's when everyone's computer talks together and agrees that one computation is true. And okay. That computation can be anything.
Right. The show's ending, but we keep talking. It's just not recorded. So stay on the line.
All right.